Agencies lose a new record of $125 billion in improper payments last year. 22 different agencies committed errors, and three programs account for $93 billion in improper payments. One of those is the Earned Income Tax Credit. Danny Werfel's director of Boston Consulting Group, former acting commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, and former controller at the Office of Management and Budget, writing for the Center for Public Impact, and writing that cutting government waste is not as simple as it might seem. Danny, thanks very much for coming on the program today. You of all people would know that because you and I have been talking about this issue since your OMB days. When you point out in this piece the nuts and bolts of improper payments, what's the area on which you think folks should focus first? Thanks for your time today.
Well, first of all, Francis, thanks for having me. I mean, I've been involved in the battle against improper payments for a long time. Actually, when the Improper Payments Information Act, the first government-wide legislation, was issued and enacted in 2002, the earlier part of the Bush administration, I was a part of a team at OMB that was setting up to start to implement the law and ramp up efforts government-wide. And, you know, and almost from day one, what struck me about this effort is how challenging it is, and the fact that there's a lot of complexity that goes into almost every dimension of the battle against improper payments. We started just with the challenge of measuring improper payments, figuring out where they were in government. It was kind of like a search and destroy mission, and going through that detection period and doing the measurements was challenging. It's not something that that you automatically know exactly where the errors are and how much you're making, so you have to develop the disciplines in order to do appropriate measurement. And then once we develop that inventory, and this is going back to 2004, 2005, 2006, as we started to get a handle on the inventory, then we started to turn our attention to what are the corrective actions that are needed. How do we attack these improper payments? And what we soon learned was that there was no fast and easy solution, that there was a lot of complexity in the solutions themselves. And what really is interesting is there's policy tensions in some of the solutions. Sometimes, in order to reduce the error, you create other policy issues or concerns. So there's a lot of balancing that needs to go on.
You write in this piece a lot that I found very interesting, but this passage in particular, you write, in a few cases, such waste, and you write about some of the areas where waste is found in government, is the direct result of bureaucratic incompetence. In many cases, however, the circumstances surrounding government waste are more complex. Some government spending may look questionable on the surface, but actually represents a difficult trade-off between various not-so-great options. And that gets right at the heart of what you're talking about in both just a moment ago and in this piece about, you know, sometimes the, what's the old saying about the best of intentions, the road to good intentions and all of that?
I mean, there's so many different interesting examples that show this tension, and I speak about a couple of them in the piece. But as an example, when I, you know, first started looking at improper payments from my seat at OMB, you know, one of the first things that you get excited about is the solution is data. You know, whether, you know, so for example, a lot of programs make improper payments because, and when they're doing their eligibility reviews, it turns out the individual has understated the amount of income they have, the amount of assets they hold. And so you're overpaying them from what their actual eligibility is. Well, there are data sources around government that you can go to potentially figure out with more accuracy how much income these individuals have or how much assets they hold. The challenge is that that data is protected by Privacy Act provisions. And the notion that government agencies are just going to move data from one agency to another in order to attack improper payments seems rational. But then when someone else is at the table making the case that all of that data moving around from agency to agency creates data privacy and data security issues, well, now you have a much more complex set of discussions to have. And obviously, right now is a really important time to talk about data security with what's going on at OPM. But it just it really shows you that there are tensions, that even though there's some other agency out there that holds data that can help you get a better sense of whether this individual is eligible for the payment or not, you can't automatically just draw on that data. You have to think about other implications of pulling that data in.
How much of that do you think, Danny, is an actual policy issue or a privacy issue where the information needs to be shared very carefully if it's going to be shared at all? And how much of it is just a cultural or stovepipe problem where somebody has something and they just say, well, that's ours, and we just don't necessarily want to share it?
Well, I think there's a healthy mixture there, Francis. I mean, on the one hand, you know, there a lot has been done over the past several years to try to create what I'll call safe passage for the data to move across agencies in order to answer questions and reduce improper payments. I mean, Congress has a lot of control here. They have a lot of restrictions in terms of what data can be shared and when. And it's incumbent upon the federal agency to build the business case to show, look, there is some risk in sharing this information, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to demonstrate that the benefit of sharing the information is important because here's how many improper payments we're going to be able to reduce. And also, here are some of the controls that we're going to be put in place to protect the data. And in certain situations, the case is made and the data is shared. But in other cases, Congress and others make the decision that the business case isn't strong enough and we're going to continue to protect the data. I mean, one of the great examples of that is IRS data. And there's a whole provision of the tax code called Section 6103, which has a whole series of what I'll call basically constraints from making sure that the IRS does not share taxpayer data without enormous amount of care. And so very often agencies want access to that data because it can help them reduce improper payments, but it's very, very narrow aperture that Congress has created for the sharing of IRS information. And again, that's a policy trade-off. Could more improper payments be reduced if the IRS opened that database up more? Certainly. But there are policy consequences to doing that, and in the end, it's a balance. And Francis, the other thing I want to point out, and we're talking a lot about data sharing, mm-hmm. but inherent in the battle against improper payments is fundamentally the tension between, you know, setting up extra steps, process, bureaucracy to validate the accuracy of the payment, and the tension that has with wanting to do things quickly and efficiently with low burden. So one of the points I make in my piece, and it's a great question to ask, and there could be a lot of good debate and dialogue around it, is if HHS, as an example, and you mentioned earlier and when you introduced the segment around the fact that there's only a couple of programs that make up such a significant portion of improper payments, and Medicare and Medicaid are two of those programs that are driving a lot of these big numbers. Well, one of the potential solutions here could be to impose additional paperwork, additional process steps, additional requirements on hospitals and other medical providers before they can provide the service in order to validate Medicare and Medicaid eligibility. And that would help with the integrity of the payments, but would also be potentially disruptive, slow the process down, and raise other types of challenges with respect to healthcare delivery. And so the question then becomes finding that right balance. And certainly I don't think we're at that right balance right now because we have too many improper payments. But then again, I don't think the answer is just to layer on additional upfront requirements and process steps, because that raises different issues as well.
I see a positive and a negative about the business case scenario that you mentioned a few moments ago, Danny. The positive is that I see agencies more engaged in risk management conversations now than I've ever seen them before in all the years I've been covering them. The negative is that incidents like the OPM breach and the expansion of the IRS breach that we learn about today, unfortunately, gives Congress an opening to say, well, you guys aren't very good at handling information, so we're really hesitant to allow any risk at all, let alone a managed level of risk.
Yeah, I think these are really important points to the overall debate. I mean, one of the main inspiration behind the piece that I was writing was really kind of to make sure that that more and more people are educated that there is a lot of complexity in government management and government operation and government implementation. And, you know, we see things occur and you can scratch your head at $125 billion in improper payments and say, man, that sounds like the government just doesn't know what it's doing. And what I'm trying to do is basically kind of make sure that if we're going to solve the problem, we have to get deeper than just an upfront conclusion that this is the result of fraud or waste or government incompetence. As it turns out, in order to really tackle that $125 billion in error, there's a lot of nuance and sophisticated analysis that needs to go into what the right path is for the government to take. And some of those pathways include steps that would reduce error but increase burden and potentially provide some other disruption into a program. So we have to evaluate that. And in some cases, the path that can help reduce that error is going to raise different issues with respect to data and how it's managed. And the government in certain circumstances might not just be at the right maturity level at this point in time to do that type of data sharing in order to reduce the errors. And once you start to diagnose the problem and realize how multidimensional it is, then you start driving the types of solutions that are needed. For example, we need better data security. We need to understand what the right disciplines are and to put in place to create those safe passages that I referenced earlier on data transmission. Again, in order to get to the understanding of what disciplines the government needs to do a better job on improper payments, you have to push way past the generic conclusion that it must be a result of incompetence, and you have to kind of get into what are the tools, what are the disciplines, where does the government need to mature its management and its implementation in order to be successful.
Danny, we just have a minute left, but what one takeaway from for me from this piece was that a significant element to helping this problem would be decomplexifying these problems, and that lays exclusively on the shoulders of Congress.
That raises another really interesting question, because if, for example, you simplified eligibility and didn't have such a complex formula that was in place in order to decide who was eligible, for example, for an EITC credit, that would be helpful. That would be enormously helpful in terms of reducing improper payments. But it also could have the impact of expanding the number of people that are eligible for the credit, which raises interesting questions. But in particular, there's a budget issue that raises, because as you simplify eligibility requirements, there's a risk that you're going to create a broader pool of eligibles. And when I use the word risk, I mean that only means that there could be an increased hit on our budget. And so, again, these are really interesting policy debates that need to happen. I think you want to look at, should we simplify some of these eligibility criteria to make the administration of the programs easier and therefore reduce their errors? But on the other side of the table, somebody has to be sitting there calculating how much additional budget and what the deficit hit is going to be. And other people have to be saying, well, if you're going to expand eligibility for this program, what about these other programs? And then you're kind of doing some trade-offs in terms of where we want to be allocating resources. So again, these are really, really important questions to be asking. And again, it's part of the broader theme that in order to tackle this problem, we need some multidimensional analytics going into each solution.